I help people understand there's lots of things that people do in their day that they might be doing multiple times without realizing. My favorite example is emails. I used to fall into this trap, educating people, for example, emails. We now are connected on our phones and our smartphones with emails, for example. So this is one example of many. So in the morning, I used to get up at 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock, whatever time, and I would check my emails. And then I'm like reading my emails, knowing I'm not going to action any of these emails until I get to work. That is a huge waste of time.
Welcome to the Menopause Mindset Podcast, the place to get some answers and feel supported along this often a bumpy journey. Many people sail through menopause, but many people don't. And so my guests and I are here to motivate you and inspire you so that you can make menopause a happier transition for yourself and for your loved ones. I'm Sally Garozzo, an award-winning clinical hypnotherapist, a menopause educator, and I can't wait to share my passion about wellness and how we navigate these changes and transitions. So come on then, let's dive in. So my guest today is Camille Pearson. Camille is the founder of the very successful Float Spa here in Brighton. She's also a naturopathic health coach, behaviour change expert and hormone specialist. And after learning the hard way, Camille set to change her life through absolute commitment to well-being. And since then, she's achieved a half Ironman, won her age group in the Brighton Triathlon, and is currently training for the London Marathon. She now prioritises helping people make changes in their lives to enable them to be happier, healthier and more fulfilled. I'm so looking forward to speaking with Camille today because I know that she's extremely passionate about how we can improve our lives through well-being and habit change. So Camille, welcome to the Menopause Mindset Podcast. How are you today?
I'm really good, thank you. Yes, thank you so much for having me. It's an honour and a pleasure to be here. So I'm very excited to be part of this conversation today.
Oh, brilliant. So I'd love to start with your story. Many of the guests that I interview have got a story of how they transitioned to where they are today. So I'm curious to know, what was it that flicked the switch for you into the world of wellness?
So I suppose I've always been super into fitness and health at school. I was actually born with a hole in my heart. It's also called as an atrial septal defect, and actually was told not to do sport. And but I only found out about that when I was 8 or 9, and I'd already been pretty active and whatever. And then as I got older and as I went to secondary school, I didn't really, I suppose, fit in with the girl thing. So I just did loads of sport at school. I was captain of the hockey team, played tennis, played any sport you gave me, I just did. When I was younger, I'd been invited to try out for the county for swimming. But, you know, my childhood was very complicated at home, and yeah, my mum wouldn't commit to that kind of level of commitment, I suppose, is the nicest way to put it. So I just did everything I could through school. And it was amazing. Sport was my escape, I suppose, from teenage years. And then obviously I grew up a bit, moved to Brighton, found a more different hobby, which was going out and drinking and partying all night, which was great fun. My sport and everything fell off a cliff a little bit. And then I kind of dabbled a little bit back in and forth. I'd got a job in, a really high pressured marketing role, and life was fine, running about 5,000 miles an hour. Got married, had a baby. And then it was only when my daughter was 11 months old that she got very, very sick and nearly died. And then at that point, I then spiraled into a very dark place. And it was then that something had to change. And it was, you know, the result of her illness, which then resulted in a PTSD, anxiety and depression diagnosis, not just from the incident, but a hell of a lot of childhood trauma, which then went on to a road of recovery. And the recovery for me was all about the wellness world, looking at different techniques. I trained as a CBT specialist and obviously had cognitive behavioral therapy, found flotation. And then I was like, oh, you know, this world's quite good, actually. When you start feeling good, why do you want to go back to feeling bad? And that was it. I then went on this spiral journey into wellness in 2014 and then never looked back.
Yeah, brilliant. I love that. Was there anything going on with your hormones? Like, what did you learn about your hormones? Because obviously this is a podcast about menopause. Yeah. So we kind of have to bring the hormone element into it. And also it's such a big issue for so many women, hormones. So was there a hormone link to your recovery?
Definitely. Okay. I think if we're going back to, you know, when I was a teenager, I had a very horrendous time with my cycle. As soon as my cycle started, I pretty much every time I started my first day of bleeding, I was then rushed to hospital because I lost so much blood, went into anemia. And then when you're 16 and you're all over the place constantly, it was like, just go on the pill and it will sort yourself out. I then went on the pill and went a whole cycle of the pill, different types of pill. I went on the Depo-Provera injection and I basically destroyed my hormones through playing with it. And all my training now would be, give it time to stabilize. And I didn't give it time, didn't allow it to stabilize. And then when I had my daughter, it's very interesting if you've ever had kids, is they like to, as soon as you've had your baby, get you back on some form of contraception. And it's like, oh, I've got a baby that's quite colicky and quite sick. What contraception are you using? I was like, I am so tired. I do not have time to even have sex right now. And you're trying to tell me that I need to go on some form of contraception and I'm worried about my child. It was very weird. And I genuinely believe I went back on the pill, I think about maybe 3 or 4 weeks before my daughter got ill. And then I genuinely think that the pill that they put me back onto, which was a different one, sent me into this horrendous place. Yes, there was PTSD. Yes, there was anxiety. Yes, there was depression, probably underpinned by postnatal depression as well. All around this time, you know, if I hadn't taken the pill, would the results have made me so sick? I don't know. It all seemed very coincidental, and hindsight is wonderful. And ever since that period, I have just let my hormones do as they wish, because I think there's a pattern between maintaining hormones, being healthy, living an active lifestyle, the food that we eat. And the more informed you get, the more information you have, the better you are at controlling them yourself.
Right. So that brings me on to my next question. How do you optimize your hormones today? Because obviously I don't know how old you are, but someone going through perimenopause, like listening to this podcast, they're going through peri and their hormones are all over the place. They're dealing with perhaps estrogen dominance 1 minute, and then the next minute they're dealing with not having enough estrogen. So it's all over the place. So how do you, as someone who is an athlete and who clearly puts their body under a lot of pressure, which will affect your hormones, how do you optimize them?
So a big part of how I live my life is not being a man. Okay. And when I say this, I say it with the most respect to everybody, is in a month, our hormones change. They go, you know, estrogen, you know, that if you understand your cycle, if we put a stereotype of a cycle, you know, from day one of bleeding until you stop bleeding, you are most like a man. And then from that is then after your bleed time, your estrogen increases. Hopefully it's your E1 estrogen if you're trying to conceive, or your reproductive years, or whether it's your E3 in your menopausal years. So your estrogen increases ever so slightly, and then it goes up nice and gradually. And it's only after that then estrogen declines. You then have a little tiny peak of testosterone. And then in the second half of your cycle, the second half of your cycle is when your progesterone increases, and then it declines. That's why some people get grumpy just a few days before their period, because they're losing all hormones as then they become most like a man again, stage one. If we think of our life as a perfect 28-day cycle, which not all women are, don't be worried about that. You've got to understand that at different days, you will have more energy, less energy. You'll feel stronger. You'll feel like you could run a marathon tomorrow. Then the other days, you're like, you really struggle to get out of bed. So if our hormones dictate that, we shouldn't live every single day the same. So understanding when our peaks and troughs of energy is, when we are more hungry, when we are, you know, our natural ability to suppress, you know, we don't feel hungry or whatever. If you understand that you live in a more hormone cycle living or a cyclical living, and we split our month into what I always think of four sections, so winter, summer, spring, autumn, it's super easy to remember that. We can then understand when we can achieve more, when we have more energy, do more, and when we have less energy, do less. That sounds very simple. When we're going through menopause years, obviously, or perimenopause, that, you know, becomes slightly more complicated. But I genuinely believe through food, lifestyle, movement, you know, meditation, all these kind of things, that you can live more harmonious. So yeah, you can balance it. My, just because I train 7 days a week, I do not train like a neurotic person 7 days a week. I don't do high intense workouts. There's plenty of times I just sit on the bike and just have a chat basically, or go for a run. And, you know, I took my husband for a run yesterday. And I generally think it's the slowest I've ever run in my life. But it was just, we ran and we chatted and it was really nice. Whereas I, you know, tomorrow my run might be a little bit more intense. And I try to optimize my life to go with when your hormones are at higher and when they're lower. Mm-hmm. And the result is you then achieve more. The England Lionesses do cycle tracking. And I think it's really important to help, you know, understand how you can achieve more when you have more energy and achieve less when you don't need to.
So what I'm hearing is being in it over the long haul is what we're aiming for, not just thinking, right, I think I'm gonna run a marathon and just do it, maybe train for a few weeks and then just do it. I suppose what I'm interpreting this is it's a lifestyle. It's, you've got to be in it for the long haul. So you get those peaks and troughs within that overall commitment to your life, the health of your life.
Totally. I mean, I live, I work as a health coach. I see lots of people coming to see me and they often say things like, oh, I want to lose weight. That's the number one, one of the reasons people come to see me. And I say, that's amazing. And I can help you lose weight. But what I love helping people understand is that you're going to change the way you think about food forever. Change the way you live your life forever, because there's a reason that New Year's resolutions don't work. There's a reason that diets don't work, and they do for the short term. And then we go and up and down yo-yoing. And it's like, well, why would you live your life based on peaking and troughing? And actually, to sustain energy, or flatline, as my clients always say, it's the most boring analogy of having, you know, more, you have more energy, but you don't peak and trough. You just have a flat line of energy where you just wake up in the morning, you have a gentle increase, you feel very energized through your day, and then it naturally depletes at the end of the day. Then you go to sleep, you wake up, and so it repeats. So this flat line of energy without the peaks and troughs is a much sustainable way of living forever. And when you do cheat, and I ate a lot of chocolate over Christmas, understanding how rubbish I felt, I was like, why am I doing this? Eat the cake if you want the cake, enjoy the cake, don't feel guilty for it. But trying to maintain that kind of lifestyle change when you start feeling good, why would you ever change to go back to when you feel rubbish, I suppose?
Yeah, so when you eat the cake, notice how you feel afterwards, and then question when you're approaching the cake in the future, question, well, how do I actually want to feel after the cake? Like, there's a payoff there. Have it if you want it, if you're okay with the payoff, but know that there is a choice to not have it if you don't want to experience the consequences.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Or make a cake with less sugar.
Or make a cake with less sugar. Yeah, absolutely. Alternative ingredients.
Yeah, I would
okay,
help that.
So you teach. Go on.
As I was going to say, there's lots of ways of eating cake that is healthy cake. And so therefore it can encourage your hormones to be more balanced. You can feel more that you've got more energy. There's lots of things. But what is really important is never feel guilty if you do something bad. Just enjoy it. Enjoy the process and then carry on.
Yeah, and learn from it, I suppose. Yeah, exactly. Always like tuning into your body. I am absolutely fascinated with people that do hardcore things, things that I consider quite hardcore that I can't do, like a triathlon, like an Ironman, like running the marathon. I mean, thanks to you, Camille, I am now doing Couch to 5K, and I did my jog this morning, which I'm absolutely loving. I'm loving the small progress and how I feel afterwards, and just that feeling of, oh my God, this actually feels quite easy, and I know that next time I'll be able to build on that and it won't feel desperately difficult. How, I've got so many questions around this, but first of all, how would someone go from having maybe a sedentary job, not doing much exercise, not eating very healthy, to doing something like an Ironman? Well, first of all, what is an Ironman?
So an Ironman is a very long distance triathlon. It is a three parts done over the same day. So the first part is a 2.4-mile swim, followed straight after by a 112-mile bike ride, followed by running a marathon. So all back to back in a day.
So a whole marathon.
A whole marathon, yeah. After all that. So I have done a half distance Ironman, which I did in July, and that is half the distance. So 1.2-mile swim, followed by a 56-mile bike ride, and then half a marathon. So 13.1-mile run.
Right. I'm just going to stop you there. How does it feel doing that?
Oh, I don't want to swear. Absolutely incredible. You literally feel like you are superhuman. And what I spent, because in July, it was my very first half Ironman. And my favorite running race is half marathons. I love half marathons. I've done them for years. It is my favorite distance. And it's that bit between, so if anyone does any running, you might do 5K at park run. And actually, I find 5Ks and 10, I find 10Ks really hard, because it is flat out for as long as you can hold it for, basically. And I'm not a sprinter. I've always been into a bit more endurance, and I love the preparation and the mindset of planning a pace, setting a pace, maintaining maybe just a little bit ahead of your pace, the nutrition. So I love all that stuff, because actually the extra part of triathlon is how you're going to fuel yourself for the next bit. And I have made some mistakes. I have, you know, burnt out of energy and thought I was going to collapse. I've done the wrong wetsuit. I couldn't get out of it and had to have someone help me out of it. You know, punches, fallen off my bike. I've done everything you could ever imagine. And it is hilarious, because it's all about learning. But yes, I love the concept of triathlon, maybe because I don't have to be an expert in any discipline. I just get to be good at each one.
And I mean, it's got to hurt. It's got to hurt for sure. You've got to be at a certain point and think, what the hell am I doing?
Well, yes, there is an element. So the half in July, I went to Swansea and I picked stupidly a hill bike course, because I love cycling up hills. Okay, it's a thing. I didn't realize this is a thing at the time, but you've got in the, you know, the Tour de France, you've got the hill climbers. I am a hill climber. I love powering up hills. I don't like going down them that fast, but I love the challenge of powering up the hills. So I selected my race, which was a hill race, thinking that would be great. And when I got to Swansea in July, there was 40-mile-an-hour gale-force winds. And the Saturday before the Sunday race that I was doing, they cancelled the Para Tri-Series because the weather was so bad. So my weakest discipline is the bike. I get quite nervous. And because I'm very good at swimming, I get out of the water very quick, and then, no disrespect to the men around me, I have lots of very fast men on bikes towering past me really fast. And you are just this quite small person holding a very light bike and this horrendous weather. So I got out of the swim, and I must admit, there was times where I was thinking, I got on the bike and it was so cold. It was very windy. It was horrendous rain. And about an hour into this, I was thinking, what on earth am I doing right now with my life? I chose to enter this race. I chose to enter this race. I paid for it. I've paid for my family to come. What the hell am I doing? And it was, I must admit, the bike was very hard, but it was mainly because of the conditions. And you do chat to people around you, and, you know, the weather eased up a little bit, and, you know, it was just get to the, you work out a plan, you know, hit the first 30 kilometers, you'll be fine, hit the next 30 kilometers. And you just have these sections in your mind in order to get you through it. And as I got off the bike, I started the run, and actually I felt really strong and I didn't expect, and I think maybe I'd held back on the bike because I was quite nervous because the weather was so bad, and it had cleared up quite a bit, and the route was out and back on the seafront. You're just running up, running back, running up, running back, and I was thinking, anyway, I know my run's good, and I just started overtaking people, and I was thinking, all right, started running along with this guy, and he's like, we held the same pace for a while, and after about 10 kilometers, he said, I can't hold this pace, you're too fast for me. When a man says that, that does make you think, oh, I've got loads in the tank, and I just carried and I carried on, and as I came to about the 20K of a 21 and a bit K run, I was like, I've got loads of energy left. So I just basically took off, sprinted the final one and a bit kilometers, and I just ran in, and my husband was like, where are you? He's like, he just couldn't believe. And I finished and went, do you know what? I've got a full one in me. It wasn't enough of a test. And I must admit, it was the most euphoric. I've never felt so good about finishing a race. It was so, the bike was very hard. I gave myself times. You're not really meant on race. You shouldn't really give yourself objectives, but I do like targets. My run was faster than I predicted. My swim was faster than predicted. And unfortunately, the bike was 15 minutes slower. But that was because the conditions were really difficult. And when I looked at everybody's times, because obviously you do the comparison, everybody was about half an hour slower than their predicted times because of the weather. And I know I did everything I could, and I was very happy. I did really well. I came in the top 10 for my age, which was pretty good out of 50, 60 other people. So I was really happy. The pain came the next day. I couldn't really sit down. But it was euphoric. And, you know, like you would say on your runs, like that minute when you finish that, like you've never had those surge of adrenaline, your all those hormones that are going through your body that just say, oh my God, you feel amazing, you've done brilliant, are just flooding you. And you are on like the biggest high you've ever been on for about 3 days until you crash.
I'm getting totes emosh. I'm seriously like welling up here. Do you cry at marathons? Because when I see them running past, I cry. Is that a thing? It's just that euphoria, you know.
I've cried at start lines of races more times than you can ever. I've cried halfway through when I thought I was going to die as well. But the start is, especially some of the charity led races. Ironman is not a charity. People enter that because we're endurance idiots, basically. So you don't tend to get much like the charity places. It tends to be people that like triathlon that are pushing themselves. Whereas when you do like the Brighton Half Marathon or the London Marathon or something like, you see all these t-shirts of people wearing fundraising, you know, and you just read, you know, I'm doing this because, you know, my dad died, or I couldn't have done that with the help of this, or you have, and it does choke you up. And there are times where you just can't control your emotions and you're trying to run or, you know, cycle or whatever. And there are times, and it is so overwhelming, I think can be a good word for it. But yeah, it's certainly an addiction, maybe, and not a good one, that thrill of the endorphins.
Yeah, I guess that's what makes you keep coming back. And I guess it's similar. I haven't had children, but maybe it's the same thing. You forget the pain of childbirth because there's so much euphoria at the end of it. And I wonder if it's the same with finishing, completing something like an Ironman or a marathon. Just this euphoria makes you want to come back and do it again.
Yep. There's races that I've done that I will never do again. Okay. Yeah, and then you're still trying to question whether or not you're insane for even starting it in the first place. But I do genuinely believe that you get this rush of hormones that makes you forget everything. But then I think once you have done many races, you do your post-race analysis, and then you start to fine-tune what I did right, what I did wrong, how I can improve. That's, I suppose, the kind of competitive athlete in me. How do I get better? How can I learn?
Yeah.
And it goes back to your question. If you've, you know, I led a very sedentary life pre-2014. Maybe I went to the gym every now and again. I didn't necessarily do huge amounts of fitness. I'd kind of had my baby. I'd put 5 stone on, I think. God. I'd put a lot of weight on and then just really struggled to lose it. And I was eating the wrong foods. I was not really exercising and then wondering why. And it just goes back to just start. I mean, the amount of people I know that do the couch to 5K that I recommend it to is unbelievable. You know, I probably should be endorsed by the couch to 5K and ambassador for it. But I genuinely believe those kind of apps are perfect because it's just, and it's also doing what you like. If you don't like running, you are never going to have a running habit. If you don't like cycling, you're never going to take cycling. But a dance class is a cracking way of, you know, increasing your cardiovascular activity, heart health, happiness. You know, I'm sure I'm not really into dance class, but as just an example, if you went to a dance class, you will get those endorphins at the end of a dance class. If you have a vigorous session, you'll get that from a swimming, you'll get that from playing tennis, you'll get that from any form of activity because it just gets your heart moving. Maybe that cardiovascular release post, maybe even stretch and conditioning, you know, doing, you know, going to the gym, bodybuilders will get some form of release from the power and the effort that's used. And I think it's amazing, especially for women. And as we get older, we do need to move our bodies. We need to, you know, impact with the floor. We need to strengthen our bones to prevent osteoporosis. We need to, you know, increase our protein because that really helps with menopausal symptoms. We need to make sure we're fueling and moving our body in any way that we can find. And I'm a huge fan of just little things. It could be, you know, doing push-ups on the counter while the kettle boils. You don't have to go to a gym and do push-ups in the gym because the effort to go to the gym or the time we don't have. So where can you incorporate small practices during your day? Because if you had 4 cups of tea a day, hypothetically, and you did 3 push-ups on the counter every time your kettle boils, that's 12 push-ups you've achieved. 12 push-ups you've done. I was trying to work out the math. 12 push-ups you've done, whereas there's just dead time. You're just standing there waiting for it, or scrolling, doom scrolling. Do that instead.
Very true. So this is what's bringing me to my next question, is around habits, habit stacking, and how do you actually take someone from living a sedentary life to doing to being more active? How would you take a client through that process? I mean, before we came on, we were talking about sort of the myth of accountability as well, and I'd love to get into some of that too, which I think is going to be quite controversial. And that David Goggins quote. Anyway, go on, you start.
So I suppose the question is what do you actually want? So a lot of people they think they want this life, but it's actually, what do you want? So if you're diagnosed with diabetes, for example, and you may go to the doctors and they say, right, you need to reduce your sugar and you need to move more. That does sound quite easy when you break it down, but actually, what does that mean? And it just goes back to the comment about what do you enjoy first? So what I would always do is work with clients to get them to understand what new behavior they want. Because actually, what me and you want is something very different. So we need to design behavior around what it is that you want and then underpin it with how easy is it to do. As in, going to the gym might sound easy, but actually, an hour in the gym is a typical average workout, and then it's drive time, getting changed, having a shower, all the stuff. So actually the trip to the gym might take 2 hours. And the question is, do you have 2 hours in your day? So every January, I always kick myself for doing it in January, but I do a big, I do several goal setting, vision boarding workshops. And the question I always start with is ideas. What ideas do you have of what new behavior that you want? Because without the ideas, how do you even know what behavior it is that you want? It's a bit like deciding you want to make a cake. Okay. So how do you even decide what cake you want to make? What influence is that? Okay, well, maybe the ingredients, do you have to go to the shop? What utensils have you got? Does your oven work? All these factors that go in to making a cake, and the cake or the outcome is the secondary, and the focus should be on all the other stages beforehand.
Okay.
If time is poor, why add something that's going to take up so much time? So we would always start with what new behavior you want, underpin it with how much time you've got, and then work out all the stages that you're going to get there. If you have a goal like a marathon or a triathlon or whatever, it becomes easier because you're like, there's my goal. I know what it is and I've got all these steps. And it's very common that people run a marathon and then stop running forever. I did that in 2012. I ran a marathon in 2012. It's taken me 12 more years to run another one.
I see. Why is that?
I hate running marathons. It's really painful. That was my last experience. Mainly, I am a much different person now. So I used 2012 to run a marathon because I was getting married and I wanted to look great in all the photos. I was fundraising for a charity and it worked great. Then I got married and then got pregnant quite quickly and then never really got back into it. And then the only thing I'd ever did was, I love running half marathons. It's my favorite. But as soon as you get past that, it does get a bit hard.
It starts. Yeah.
But I think now I'm a completely different, I'm a completely different runner. It's a very different sport for me now versus then. But I did fall into a very stereotypical, I've got, you know, that stereotypical person. Yep. Going to do that and then I'm going to forget about it. So I understand how you can reframe that. What is the behavior I want? My thing that gets me going is I want to live a very long, healthy life. You know, there should be no reason. I was reading this great book at the moment and it's about not many people die from old age. Most people on their death certificates, it's, oh, a heart attack because she was like 105. It's the heart attack. It's still an illness as opposed to they've died of natural cause from old age. And it's fascinating with modern science and modern medicine, how that's still the case.
So what's the difference between dying of old age and dying of, you know, something that could have been prevented? I haven't even looked into that yet.
It's fascinating. And actually, I think the key for me when I was starting reading this book was just like, oh yeah, I never thought about it that way. So yes, we are able to control our life of how healthy we are. We have our chromosomes and the telomeres and the chromosomes, which dictate our health span as opposed to disease span. So there's all these things and so much knowledge out there, but it's still, you know, as people get older now, and the average age that we live to is actually longer than when we were born, believe it or not. Right. And it's interesting how even though then there's still, oh, you might get a virus. Obviously, there's been a lot of viruses. And then that virus, then they've got complications on the back of it. And then people have then died. So it's just the question is why. And that is one thing that I am really trying to understand. So therefore, we can know. But it is a big question. Most people die of an illness, not old age.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Is that the book How Not to Die?
Yeah, it's actually How Not to Age. It's actually How Not to Age. Exactly the same, Dr. McGregor's How Not to Age. So he's got How Not to Die, How Not to Diet, and How Not to Age. So yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, all this stuff into longevity is fascinating. And I do think we should be asking ourselves these questions, you know, how not to die, how not to age, because I think the when we get the answer to that, we actually get the answer for happiness and contentment and sustainability and regeneration and all these things that we can plow into other areas of our lives, like economics and business and relationships. There's nothing wrong with wanting to be better and to make the world a better place, I think, for sure. One of the curiosities that came up for me was, if somebody doesn't have the time to go to the gym or to dedicate half an hour a day to exercise, but other people do, like yourself, you dedicate a lot of time to exercise, what's the difference? What's the difference? Is it a mindset thing from going from not having the time to being able to dedicate all that time?
Not necessarily a mindset. There'll be a lot. I help people understand there's lots of things that people do in their day that they might be doing multiple times without realizing. My favorite example is emails. So, you know, I used to fall into this trap. Educating people, for example, emails. We now are connected on our phones and our smartphones with emails, for example. So this is one example of many. So in the morning, I used to get up at, 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock, whatever time, and I would check my emails. And I'm like reading my emails, knowing I'm not going to action any of these emails until I get to work. And it may be that I get an email, it's like, oh, that's there's a problem and I need to think about like replying to that email and I need to sort something out. And oh, I can't do that because, you know, my business isn't open yet and I need to. So now I'm wasting time in my head thinking about this email. I then am chatting to my kids half-heartedly, probably getting slightly frustrated that they're not, because I'm slightly heightened by the contents of the email. I'm less patient, maybe. I then wasting more time. And then when I eventually do get to work, I then reread the email and then take action. That is a huge waste of time. So that's one thing. So that's just an example, or, you know, using your time efficiently. Dedicate time to check emails. And, you know, for me, I do sit down on a Sunday and dedicate my week and my diary and put in what exercise I'm going to do that week. And that, you know, a big part of this is understanding you as a person. I personally hate getting out of bed in the morning. I am a night owl. I would stay up till midnight. I would get up at 9 o'clock if I could. But modern society, and I think that is very important to understand, dictates the time that my children need to go to school. So I have to get up earlier to get them to school. And if I want to do, you know, all this exercise, it is my time. I get up earlier to then, you know, do, like this morning, I got up at 6. I was on my bike at 6:15. I did an hour. My kids woke up at 7:15. They are then getting dressed. We're having breakfast, doing all the morning stuff as normal. And I've already done an hour workout on the bike. This doesn't mean to say I go to bed later and don't rest. I actually go to bed much earlier. Might go to bed at 10 o'clock, get up at 6. I have really good quality sleep, much better than I've ever had. I was always a terrible sleeper right from as soon as my periods came in as a teenager. I always loved just watching TV, wasting time, just browsing my phone, just doing anything other than sleep. So forcing you to sleep better, getting up earlier, actually I have more energy and I've done my exercise and I haven't encroached on, you know, family time, I suppose, is one thing to figure it. And another thing I really enjoy doing is taking runs on lunch breaks, because I would notoriously previously get to my desk, sit down for 8 hours a day, only go to the toilet and not take a break. And where I work, we have no daylight, there's no windows. So if I don't leave the space, I just don't see sunlight in the winter. So all these ways of encroaching little habits into my day, that works for me. That doesn't work for everybody, but it's a really good thing to do, is look at your schedule. And for me, health is so important. So I prioritize my fitness schedule along with meetings, kids' activities, etc. It's harder to take it out of your diary.
Yeah, that's true. scheduling and batch processing. So in terms of like email, social media, like have a time in your day when you're going to address your emails. Don't just check it because you're waiting for something. Do some press ups instead, or do some stretches instead, or some meditation instead.
Unless it's really important. If you are, I was waiting for a very important email on Friday, and I waited and waited and was checking my email constantly. But that was unusual. But you know, there are times where you can be efficient with your life. You know, look at your diary. I remember when I started doing this, I did think I was slightly crazy. But having a diary that works for you, putting all your children's activities, if you've got kids, if you don't, obviously that's frees up other time. But looking at, you know, speak to your partner, what does your diary look like? And being, you know, can you optimize the time? Only checks, if you put social media posting or research into your diary, you know you've got half an hour to do it. I would even go as much to say set a timer for passive scrolling on social media, because, you know, we all want to do it, and I am no way perfect. So set a 15-minute timer so you don't sit there for an hour and you've scrolled and you haven't really, you've just lost an hour of time. And it's not about being over the top. It might sound a bit extreme, but for some people it can work really well, especially if they struggle for time. You know, being efficient with time is key to a happier life.
Yeah. So the word optimizing is coming to my mind, like optimizing your diary, optimizing your health, optimizing your sleep, so that you can live life a bit more fluidly. With a bit more fluidity and a bit more seamlessness, and there's not as much resistance in your energy field, in your life, and all of that. Would you say that's a good word?
I think that's a great word.
Yeah. Okay. Something that just came to my mind was if someone's feeling like shit, right? They're in the throes of perimenopause. They've never really been that interested in wellness before. They know they need to do something, and they found you and they came to see you. Where would you start with someone? Because obviously there's so many different ways you can start, isn't there? Like, oh, let's start with exercise or food or sleep or where would you start with someone?
Everybody is different. And we would start with, so we always work on what people want. And if you're in the throes of perimenopause and everything is spiraling constantly out of control, if we try to change everything, we will achieve nothing. And we start with one thing at a time. It's almost like behavior mapping each new behavior at a time. If your sleep is the biggest challenge, so say you are not sleeping because everything is going all over the place, we might start with sleep. And as soon as we've maintained a better, so, you know, fatigue, tiredness, brain fog is probably the worst, is the hardest symptom for most people in menopause, especially if you work. So you're working and you're in work and you forget stuff, and then it looks like you're failing in an environment because it's not your fault. But a lot of the male dominated industries, you know, if you're in the finance industry, the accountancy industry, some of the biggest, you know, industries that most people work in still have this mindset that you have to be perfect at all times. And if you don't meet that objective, most people, what they do is try to work longer and prove that they're doing their time. And actually, let's start with sleep maybe for that person, or it might be, let's start with food, or it might be, let's start with movement. It completely depends on the person. And we would look at it in order of priority. What is the quick wins that don't require much effort? And what is the ones that are going to take a little bit longer? And usually within about 6 weeks, we've kind of seamlessly, without realizing, nailed out each area, each avenue, if that makes sense. But we certainly don't want to start with all things at once, because it just becomes too overwhelming. And when you are in the throes of brain fog, sweats, fatigue, everything's all over the place, overwhelm is not something that we want to add into the mix.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense that you would do that. And I think once you start seeing improvements in one area of your life, that really motivates you to then go, oh, it does work and it's really worth investing in. So it gives you a little bit more motivation to then go over into the other area of your life.
Exactly. And a lot of times we work on really small things. So we start with the real tiny little small victories, because my favorite quote is people change best when they feel good. When it's New Year's resolutions and everyone's giving up everything in January because everyone's overindulged in Christmas, well, you don't feel good when you give up everything at once. So if you feel rubbish, then you're not going to carry on. You need to feel good and you need to be empowered and you need to celebrate all the tiny little things. And when you start to achieve these tiny things, sometimes getting out of bed at 8 o'clock is a challenge in itself. And if we start celebrating the fact we get out of bed at 8 o'clock and we get dressed rather than leave pajamas on or whatever, actually, that is huge. And for some people, that is a massive challenge and achieving that is humongous. But to others, that might seem really insignificant, but everybody's different and understanding what challenges everybody have is paramount to success. Yeah. And it is all about celebrating every success, because when we celebrate, yeah, those feelings of endorphins feel fantastic.
Yeah. Sometimes I celebrate just getting my gym kit on. I'm like, I have no intention of exercising, but I'm just going to put my gym kit on. And then I'm like, oh, wait, my gym kit's on now. Well, I could just go for a run, or I could just go to the gym now. So it's like, excuse me, teeny tiny bite sized little things. It's like, right, I'm not going to the gym, but I'll just put my gym gear on. You know, that I talk myself, I have these like hacks where I hack into the process just in a step-by-step way, and then massively congratulate myself for getting my appropriate clothes on or whatever. So yeah,
I still do that, you know. There's times where I'm like, oh, for God's sake, I can't be bothered to go for a run today, and then I just put my running clothes on in the morning, and then it's very difficult to remove your running clothes if you've not been for a run. And you're like, oh, I'm it's dressed so now. It doesn't require much effort. I'll just run around the block. And just run around the block. And that's, you feel better. And then, oh, I'll just do it twice or three times. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. It feels amazing. And jumping up and down because you've achieved something. You know, I've got blocks in my life of like writing in journals. And I've been doing a journal every day. And I still celebrate that I'm doing it. And it's a huge victory for me. For some people, they find that very insignificant, but I love it.
Yeah, good for you. You do recommend, or you say you train every day. So my question with that is, what about recovery? Because I've heard that your collagen, I don't know if you know Joanne Avison, she's a fascia teacher. I heard her talk once about the recovery rate of collagen is like 30 hours. So if you're training on top of an unrecovered fascial system, I'm not sure how that would work. I'm speaking as someone that has had significant body pain with working out a lot and then having to have a lot of rest in between sessions. What would you say to that?
One, I'm a huge advocate of magnesium. So obviously floating is great for magnesium, and magnesium is incredible for muscle repair, easing tension, and helping to repair your muscles. So it's one mineral that's in charge of helping your body repair. So I don't train like a crazy person 7 days a week. So today is what I call like a recovery bike ride, and it's a very gentle, it's just like keeping my legs ticking over for an hour. It's, you know, it's my heart rate is in the easy threshold, which some would question what's the point, but it just keeps my legs ticking over. Yesterday, I actually went for a recovery run. Again, I went for my went out with my husband. We just went super gentle, super easy. To be honest, Sunday was a really easy day. So I've just had three easy days on the bounce, and they are, you know, very low. My heart rate is very, very low. So very low aerobic heart rate is possibly not even into zone two. So super, super easy. Tomorrow, my training consists of 1 hour of long intervals. So it will be going into VO2 max threshold, and then the next day will be easy recovery. So, and also because I train multi-sport, my swim that I go for a swim might seem like a very long swim to people, but a big part of my swim is doing drills, so positioning of your shoulders and your head and things like that. So actually, it's not like you're just going to the pool and swimming like 100 lengths. I don't do that. And if I go to the pool and swim 100 lengths, I'll be swimming 100 lengths at a very slow pace versus when I do a swim session that might be at race pace, for example. So it's very important that my intensity is high and low, giving my body as much time to recover as possible.
Yeah.
I don't think I've had an intense workout. What day are we on? Tuesday, since Friday morning when I hit the pool. And then I've had 4 days of what is much less intensity, but still keeping my body ticking over. Because if you're in pain or anything like that, that's not a good sign. To me, it's more about using different muscles. Swimming is all about your arms, not your legs. Running is more whole body. Most times on the bike, it's less intense. So it's majorly important to completely vary the intensity.
Yeah, okay. And it's all relative as well. So rest for you would look different. Rest for me, sort of thing. Yeah. I like that about the magnesium. I'm definitely going to get some magnesium, Epsom salts for my bath.
There's also a magnesium spray, lotions or oils, or if you wanted to, you could supplement. But, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of supplementation. I think you get a lot from your diet. And if you can, especially something like magnesium, you can apply it topically on your skin. So it's great.
Yeah, through the skin. Yeah, that's brilliant. That's excellent. I love everything that we've covered today. It's just so fascinating. How do you keep yourself motivated?
Oh, I knew this question was coming. So there's obviously internal motivators and external motivators. So I do find that I'm naturally quite energetic. Obviously, you know that about me anyway, you could probably see that. And I love the feeling of what sport gives me. So my motivation would be that moment when you finish even a low intense run or a low intense bike ride or a swim session. It's just that feeling once you've finished, you feel that your whole body is like alive, you can feel all the cells like pumping around, and it feels amazing. So for me, I love that kind of motivation, but there's always a caveat. You know, I started thinking about triathlon in 2020, I think it was, I did my first ones in 2022, and then I did six last year. And I do love the racing environment. And then when you do a race, it's like, how can I do that better? I want to come back next year and do it better. And so I do have some of that external motivators. And as I've progressed, I must admit, I've now fallen into the trap of going, oh, that person did this and she's in my age group. Can I do that? What can I do better? And so, yes, I've now fallen into the external motivators. So when you're feeling a bit less motivated, you're like, right, what's my base? Where do I need to be? Where I am at now? And more importantly, what do I need to achieve? So whilst I still train 7 days a week, which I've mentioned, is from September last year, I took all the intensity off and would probably say for a good couple of months. And then January for 2024 is when it all starts building up again, and work on little cycles like that. It also keeps it a bit interesting as well.
Yeah, yeah. Have you got anything that you're working towards now?
I've got the London Marathon coming up in April. And then I've set some goals for events this year. The event schedules had changed recently because of other factors that are going on in my work life, which is, it's been tough. But there will be at least 3 or 4 triathlons this year, not massive long ones. This year there will be shorter ones. Triathlon is a great sport. It can, you know, a race could take you anywhere from an hour to, you know, 20 hours, and then some people in my tri club do races that last for 5 or 6 days. So you know, it's a very interesting sport. It's quite complicated to start with, but there's lots of different distances. So you don't have to always be doing Ironman distances. You can do, you know, the entry level ones or the sprinter ones, which are, you know, are fun for different reasons. You basically don't have time to think.
Wonder. Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah. Just makes me, hearing you speak is making me marvel about the human body and how flipping amazing the potential that this human body has to become so efficient, you know, burning fuel and oxygen and all these things that promote this metabolic health. It's like sometimes we think we're lumbered with what we've got and the situations that we're in and that, but talking to people like you, I just find it so inspiring that you do this really difficult stuff. Because I always think to myself, if another human being can do it, then surely I might not be able to do exactly the same as them, but surely I can improve. Surely I can get better. It's like I had to memorize something once and I thought, well, if Benedict Cumberbatch can memorize Hamlet, I can memorize a 10-minute speech. You know, surely there must be a technique to it. And it's just a case of hacking into the technique and giving yourself space and time to practice. So there's always a system. There's always a way of being able to improve and move forward, which is why I love speaking to people like yourself.
It's important to surround yourself with people like that as well. It's like I do help out at park run at the junior park run for kids 4 to 14 years. And on Sunday, I was inspired. There's this chap that turns up every week and helps to volunteer, Terry. I don't know how old he is, but I would presume he's in his late 70s. And he literally floored me on Sunday. We were chatting about 5Ks and race times. And sometimes we get on, but we don't normally talk about that. And he just said, oh, what's my PB? And I told him, and I said, oh, what's yours? And he told me it's 62. He was 62 years old, and he ran 5 kilometres in 19 minutes and 24 seconds.
Wow.
And I was floored, and I was just, my jaw dropped, and I was like, wow, that is insane. I mean, if that is a goal of yours, great. But he only started running in his 50s. And he just started, it's just a hobby to get into. And I was so amazed at exactly what you said, the human body is totally achievable to do anything that you set your mind at. And as women, we have hormone struggles. And as we get later on in life and we have perimenopause and menopause, I don't think that is a barrier. And I see time and time again, you go to park run. So if, you know, for example, you do couch to 5K, maybe set yourself a goal to go to park run, and you will be amazed on the women, what they can achieve in their 70s. Yeah. And their, you know, it's monumental. I think a 78-year-old has done an Ironman, and with Ironman, in order to be classed as an Ironman, you have to do it in a certain time. And she has become an Ironman. And at 78, a woman is insane, because Ironman, they used to not let women do it. So the fact that women can do it and a 78-year-old can do it is just spectacular. It shows with your mindset, if you want it, and if it's what you really want to achieve, and it's what the behavior is that you want, you can achieve it.
Yeah, if you're prepared to put that work in, you're prepared to go the distance and experience what you need to experience to push the body, then yeah, you can do it. My PT used to say, today's pain is tomorrow's strength.
I like that.
That used to really motivate me. Yeah. Just quickly, do you do weights as well? Do you do like weightlifting?
I do. I think all women should lift weights. It really helps with bone density and strength. So if you are suffering from any perimenopausal symptoms or menopause symptoms, you need to strengthen your muscles, because there is a reason that 50% of women past menopause get osteoporosis. So if there's anything you take away, strength training is amazing. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean go to the gym with all the bodybuilders and sit there and try and lift weights. This could be get a couple of tins of beans at home or your own body weight and do strength training like that. Squats, you know, even just arm raises like this, anything that just really moves the muscle and builds strength is vital for women's health, in my opinion.
Yeah, 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 brilliant. I couldn't agree more. Thank you, Camille. Thank you so much for sharing all this like incredible wisdom and your story. I've really loved connecting with you and getting to know you a bit better. I'm going to put all of your links in the show notes. But where are you most active on social media?
I think mostly on Instagram. So my Instagram is Mrs. Health and Wellness. And it's a combination between personal stuff and or personal trainings and work stuff. So I think that is my favourite channel if anyone wants to connect.
Brilliant. Thank you, Camille.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
So I hope that you enjoyed that conversation with Camille and myself. And it was thanks to Camille that I actually achieved my 5K run on the 20th of February 2024. So big up to her. And of course, I'm going to be carrying on. So my biggest takeaway from that conversation was really all about optimization. I love the idea of optimization. I've always been a bit obsessed with efficiency and getting maximum results for the least amount of effort. So that sparked some new ideas in me about where I could be more efficient in my own life. So I have a small budget for help around the house, and I decided to spend that budget on getting someone else to do my laundry instead of getting someone else to clean my house. So the reason I made that decision is because I can use house cleaning as a kind of exercise tool, and I can listen to a podcast or an audiobook while I'm doing it, and I get that mental and emotional benefit associated with cleaning and reorganizing. You know, that kind of fresh, clean, complete, lovely feeling. But laundry I find difficult. So, you know, it's quite repetitive, it's quite bitty, you know, the beep constantly interrupts me. I'm not there long enough to listen to a podcast. And so I thought, well, let's see what it's like to delegate that task, to spend my budget on that task. And it's been amazing. And I reckon it's brought me around about an hour a week of extra time. So I'm really enjoying the benefits of that. I'm extremely grateful to I Hate Laundry for coming to pick up my laundry and giving it a service wash and bringing it back. I think it's an incredible service that I'm so grateful for. I just love that optimizing tip, because I really do think that the more optimized we become, the less frustration we have. And frustration is such a big barrier. It's such a big energy drain. It's just noise in the signal of our energy field, you know, creating resistance, creating stress. And anything that helps with our stress levels is going to help with our menopause. So I also just wanted to give you an update on where I'm at with the healing circles and the holding space work that I've been doing. So we completed the 3 beta tests. Big, big, big thank you to everyone who came to those. And right now I'm doing a lot of internal processing about that experience. So I'm just putting the healing circle idea to one side at the moment, because out of that experience, I decided that I needed to become a little bit more trauma informed. So about a month ago, I enrolled on a new certificate to become an ITOL accredited trauma-informed practitioner. And honestly, this is just blowing my mind. If you've seen some of my Facebook or Instagram posts about this, you'll know what I'm talking about. It's taking everything to a whole new level yet again. So I kind of feel that I need to finish that course and spend some time integrating everything that I'm learning to work out what my new offering is going to be. It's taking a little bit longer than expected, because honestly, these things just go so deep, and I really don't want to put half-assed offers out into the world that I need to change 5 minutes later. So in the spirit of today's podcast, I'd rather get it all optimized before I launch so that I don't have to go over it and change things. That said, I may be running some more free healing circles or low-cost healing circles. I'm not quite sure how I'm going to do it yet. But if you want to be privy to those, and spaces will be very limited because, you know, I can only hold space for about 8 people on one session, it's best to get onto my mailing list, because I probably won't be announcing them on the podcast. So get onto my mailing list. You can do that by grabbing my free relaxation hypnosis recording. And if you've got that recording, you will automatically be on my mailing list and you will get those emails about any healing circles that I've got coming up. And the link for that relaxation recording will be in the show notes, or you can just go to bit.ly/relaxationwithsally. So I really hope you enjoyed that conversation, and I would love to know what your biggest takeaways were. If you're listening on Spotify, you'll notice that you can interact with me now using the Q&A tab at the bottom, or as always, come and find me on Instagram. I'm at Sally Garozzo Mind Mentor, or you can email me info@sallygarozzo.com, or even better, drop me a message on WhatsApp. You can find a direct link to my WhatsApp in the show notes. Now, in a world where you could be listening to anything, I just want to acknowledge you and your drive for better health and well-being. I see you and I acknowledge you. Remember, if you're liking these podcasts and you really believe in getting the word out there about menopause, midlife, and mental health, then please subscribe, leave a review on Apple Podcasts, or you can help to support the running cost of this pod by buying me a coffee. Just go to buymeacoffee.com/Sally Garozzo. Your support means that we get to reach out to more people who need to hear this message. And happy people means a happy world. Your interaction might very well help to save another person's sanity. And finally, did you know that I have another podcast too? It's called What the Bleep is Behaviour Change Anyway? In this podcast, you'll be privy to peppery conversations between me and my super nerdy friend, Serena Simmons, who's a chartered psychologist and behavioral change expert. In this podcast, we talk about what it really takes to make changes. Plus, we throw in a few personal stories of our own. So if you want to create long-lasting, healthy changes in your life, come on over to What the Bleep is Behavior Change Anyway. All right, folks, thank you so much for your support. It means the world. Have a great week, and I'll see you next time. Bye for now.